modern-day spirituality and even the concept of modernity is something that whatever we have today is better than what we had yesterday. In other words, the cars we're driving today are better than the cars of yesteryear, and the telephones we have today, so we have the i10, is better than the 9, and better than the 2, and certainly better than the 1. So, and 11, 12, and 15, you can just imagine what they're going to like. It's always going to be getting better and better and better. It's also called living in a dream world. That you're living a dream, that everything's getting better and better, but in the meantime, everyone's asking me about stress. Now, how come we're asking about stress if everything's getting better and better? And that's because this whole concept of modernity, that we have this dream that things are going to be getting better, isn't borne out by the reality of what's happening on the ground today. Why? Because we make it up. So, Francesca, when you're talking about spirituality, what do you mean? What do you really mean by spirituality? What I mean by spirituality is an ancient spiritual tradition of fixed, unchanging philosophy, theology, and practice. So that's spirituality. If we're talking about spirituality as what is the direction in which the planets are aligned today, and how do they affect, different movements of my body, that's really not the type of spirituality that I would necessarily make anyone else interested in. It's a subsidiary science that you can believe in, but it's not spiritual, it's material. So spiritual has to be something that's really connected with the divine that's within us, and that divine which is actually our source. Okay, Francesca, I'm going to move on to Lori. And don't mind if I'm checking my watch. How does one learn to be detached when they desire so much? Lori, you got to choose. It's either one or the other. So how do you go north and south at the same time? With great difficulty. Either that or you got to have a split personality. So it's not going to work. We do have to be detached. And we have desires. You can't fulfill those desires. We have to recognize that desire is the seed of the universe. Desire is why we're here. Desire is why we get in trouble. But also desire can be the reason why we attain liberation. So desire is synonymous with who we are. We're talking earlier about spirituality, about the spirit, the soul. Desire is a function of the soul, but it's a question of what we're desiring. So when we are very clear about our spiritual identity, when we see ourselves as being distinct from this body, and we know that we're the living force within the body, and we identify with that living force, desires for the development and the evolution of the spirit soul are very favorable. They themselves are detachment. I'm just looking, using the word detachment. Sometimes we use the word renunciation. But if you misidentify with this body, and you've got a lot of plans for this body, a lot of desires that you want to fulfill through this body, then that becomes counterproductive, and it won't work. So we have to be situated first in a knowledge of who we are. And that's where everything starts. Unless you actually know who you are, and Aris is the last person on the list, Thomas is the first person, Lori is in between, unless we know who we are, we don't know actually what desire is good for us. And that's the ABC of spirituality, of religion, call it what you like. If you don't know who you are, you don't know who you are. Then you're walking into a wall. Then life becomes a dead-end street. So you have to know who you are. This is the first thing. And to know who you are, you have to be able to analyze the distinction between us, the conscious being, and this body that we're conscious of. And I'll give you a little experiment that everyone can do. Remember back to when you were a little child, and for different members here, that will be maybe 15 years ago, maybe it'll be 40 or 50 years ago, or even more, like with me. You were a little child, you can remember what you looked like, you can remember the feeling of being the same person. Now, we may be in an intermediate stage in life, and somewhere down the road, we're going to be in the stage of old age. And I'm there in the stage of old age. The body, your body, everyone's body is always changing. Our mind is also changing. How we're thinking is changing. Our intelligence is also changing. In other words, everything that we visualize and we see about ourselves changes. But isn't there something very essential that doesn't change? Otherwise, you can't be different people. That's like endless schizophrenia if you're constantly changing. The body is changing, the mind is changing, but something about us doesn't change, that if we happen to bump into a childhood friend that we haven't seen for 30 years and they say, "Are you the same Lori?" And they say, "Yes, I would have never recognized you." Well, take it from me, I'm still the same Lori. Well, how, why? Who's, what's the same? They can't recognize you. Well, really? You don't look the same. You talk different. You seem to behave different. No, I'm the same person. What's the same? What hasn't changed? That what hasn't changed, that's who we are. And that's where spirituality begins. And when we know who we are, then we know for whom we are actually, who is practicing spirituality, and for whom we're actually trying to evolve and develop into a better and better person. Now, what is this thing that we're walking around in when we look in the mirror and try to make so nice and spend so much money on, waste so much money on, unnecessarily? This is our clothes. This is our covering. This is an instrument that we have, which is meant to help us in self-realization. But unfortunately, the end result is that when we identify with this body, it becomes an obstruction to self-realization. So it's just like your car. You get in the car, your car is meant to take you somewhere. It's an instrument. You're not meant to idolize the car, identify with it, but that's what we do. This body's a car. It's meant to take us from birth to not death, but everlasting life. It's meant to give us liberation. And the body can do that. With this body, I can do my meditation. With this body, I can talk to you. With this body, I can read those books that I showed earlier. A body's a great instrument when you use it for the right purpose. But when you don't use it for the right purpose, then it becomes a real problem. So just like we had a great lunch, and there were a lot of knives involved in making the preparation, cutting up the vegetables and so on. Knife was a very handy instrument, but if a killer gets a hold of a knife, and unfortunately here in the UK we got a lot of really violent acts, and we have a lot of deaths due to knife attacks. Is it the knife's fault? No. It's the person who's wielding the knife. Either you're doing something good and providing a nice family supper, or you're actually harming someone and taking someone's life with it. So how are we using the body that we're given? How are we using this instrument? And when we're desiring to fulfill, we identify with this body and we let this body go, we just, any desire of our tongue, any desire of our genitals, any desire of our mind, anything that comes to mind we want to fulfill, then that becomes counterproductive for self-realization, because we're desiring the wrong thing, because we're identifying with the wrong thing. So, but when you desire for self-realization, then that actually becomes detachment. And when you then whatever comes in the way of self-realization, then you give that up. So in Sanskrit, it's called anukulyena sankalpa and pratikulya vivarjanam. Anukul means whatever is favorable for self-realization, accept it, and what's unfavorable, reject it. Back to my earlier topic about what do we eat, what's unfavorable for a consciousness of goodness, peacefulness, being open to spirituality, you have to accept that type of food that's favorable, and anything that's unfavorable for that, then you have to reject it. So it's a question of the direction that you want to go. You just can't go in two directions at once. You've got to choose your direction in life, and when you're going north, you got to give up everything that's south. And if you're going south, you got to give up everything that's north. Greg, how can we stop the effects of global warming in our everyday lives? It's not easy. It's really not easy. I see even in my community, habits are really hard to break. And the momentum that people have to pick up a plastic cup, to go buy a bottle of water that's got plastic in it, it's hard to break. And even when you're very conscious of it, it's just like I was just in India. And I went to a Ayurvedic clinic. Ayurveda is, you know, a health clinic, a traditional Indian medical clinic. And when I finished, they gave me different medicines to take, which I'm taking now. But all the medicines are in plastic bottles. And this is Ayurveda, and these folks are, you know, really steeped in tradition. There was no plastic in that tradition. But still, that momentum is there, and they receive the medicine in those containers, and I have the medicine in those containers. And I'm thinking, how am I going to actually transfer all that medicine into glass rather than to keep them in plastic? But still, we need to be conscious of at least doing our bit. Because once again, as Francesca mentioned earlier, if we're doing it, then what we say has effect on others. Or at least we're trying to do it. Because I try and place emphasis on that. But I can't say that I'm 100, if we're talking about plastic, I'm not 100% plastic free. Look, here's my watchband. This is made out of some kind of synthetic material. Ultimately, it's going to, when it gets worn out, it's going to end up somewhere in the Atlantic. And then it's going to get digested by, I don't know, some kind of aquatic creature. And that aquatic creature is going to get eaten up by some other aquatic creatures. And sooner or later, it may end up, Greg, in the water that you're drinking, because those little particles are going to end up on the glacier in France, and that's going to get bottled by Avian, and when you drink it, you're going to end up drinking my watch band. It's a real vicious cycle. Why? Because we're interfering with the nature of things, and there's a very delicate cycle that goes on. Nature system is a real circular interdependent system. Everything depends on everything. Nothing happened by chance. Anyone who says that things happen by chance, ask them if they happened by chance, if they came about by chance. They came about from their parents. Things aren't superfluous. There's nothing extra in the world around us. Every little blade of grass, every species of life, everyone is dependent on everything else. And when we interfere with that, or we put something artificial into that, then we start to have all of these problems. And of course, one of the real problems is global warming, and that our sea levels could be rising by inches, meters, tens of meters, and who knows how fast that will happen. And imagine the kind of chaos that that's going to cause. You can lobby for it, you can convince others, if you have that kind of influence. But at least in your own community, like within my community, I'm trying to encourage others. I'm not the only one. There are many others also. Encourage others not to be callous and not to be careless, and to actually think about the successive generations who are going to be inheriting our world. And, you know, I grew up in Canada, and I grew up 60 years ago, when I first came to Canada, and I lived there as a young boy, and I knew what pristine waters was. I used to drink out of lakes. I used to drink out of rivers. Wouldn't do that anymore. That type of life is gone. No one's going drinking out of any lake or river. But I did. I lived like that. I lived for summers during whole summer vacations. I was living out in the country where you could walk away and not see a person, hear a person, hear a machine, airplane. And I didn't have to carry a plastic bottle with me. I didn't need to carry water with me. I just drank the water that was flowing in the streams and the rivers. We have to be able to clean up this planet and pass it on to others, but it really means cleaning up our act. So if we're talking about global warming, we have to consider a lot of aspects. Are we really willing to change our lives? I don't mean just giving up plastic, because if everyone gave up plastic, the petroleum industry would really have a real hard time of it. It would mean that you could assume that your petroleum and your diesel prices would skyrocket. Are you willing to pay for it? Because that offsets the cost it also comes, all these plastics come from the petroleum industry. It would offset the price now of the fuel that we consume, but it'll become more and more expensive. Are we willing to pay for that? Or are we willing to travel less? Or are maybe willing to live a different type of life? If we want to keep the same type of life that we have and at the same time save the world, it may not work. And here's one example. Right now, the 7 billion people on this planet are consuming 50% more than the resources that this planet has. Even if everything, the status quo stays, which means that here we are in the UK, we live a very opulent lifestyle. In America, even more so, and other places in Europe. There are other places in the world, in Asia, in Africa, where people are starving to death. Even if they continue that lifestyle, or that type of average life, we're already living too high off the hog. What would it require? Well, you just do the simple arithmetic. Are you willing to cut back your lifestyle by 50%? Because that's what it would take if we're actually going to change the effects of global warming. We're taking more than there is. If we continue like this, the whole system will collapse. Things have happened, natural catastrophes have happened in the past, and there are, don't listen to me, I'm just a monk, but there are scientists out there who are screaming and who've devoted their lives to trying to convince people that the ecosystem that we have is going to implode because it can't sustain life. So what will we do? Are we willing to live by what we need instead of just always trying to fulfill our wants? And that is a real valuable and important topic, which you can discuss at another time, but it's a basic principle that everyone can consider. What do we need to live? Because we certainly don't need all the things that we have. We can do without a lot of the things that we have. So what do we need to live, and are we willing to live by our needs? Don't have to live like a pauper, because ultimately you can just live on a piece of bread a day. But at the same time, what this planet can actually provide for us, and at the same time, that we provide for those other people who are starving to death. We're not dumping our wheat into the ocean in order to keep up wheat prices. Rather, we're giving them to those people who are starving. And of course, those people weren't always starving like that. It was just that we Western society and what you could call the first world took advantage of other countries, other people, for our own benefit. Greg, and Ayobami, that's an interesting name. What is the difference between love and lust? That's a long story. I'll just make it short. Love is, well, we actually did a vlog on that sometime back. Wasn't even that far back. Maybe a week, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, something like that. We use this word love very, very cheaply. And of course, words are, in one sense, have arbitrary meanings. Here I'm recording what we could say. I could call this a carrot. And if everyone calls it a carrot, then it's a carrot. And the orange thing, you call a recorder, and you eat the recorder, and you record with the carrot. And it goes on. So similarly, you can say, you can use the word love for anything. You can say, I love my makeup, I love my shoes, I love my dog, I love so many things, I love your coat, I love Batman. So you can love many things, but love is something else. Just like this is not a carrot. At least convention hasn't allowed it to be called a carrot. So real love, or the definition of love, and once again, I'm not going into the modern definition of love, I'm going into the traditional definition of love. Traditional definition of love is the spiritual relationship between we, spirits, souls, and the Supreme Soul. And when that relationship is there, then the relationship between each of us. It's just like the connection. Right now we're connected through a telephone, it's connected through a computer, and it's connected through the Wi-Fi. So there has to be, first you're connected to the basic hotspot, and once the different instruments are connected to the hotspot, then they're connected to each other. So God, and I'm not saying this in a critical way, of course, or any other way, or humorous way, but God, in terms of this example, is the hotspot. Unless you're connected to Him, you can't connect with anybody else. So love means that you're connected to God. And when you have that dynamic relationship with God, then when you connect with other souls on a spiritual basis, which is independent of the body, and it's not dependent upon bodies, and it's not dependent on bodily contact or interaction, when that then becomes love. And that's real love. The relationship of selfless giving to make the other person, starting with God, happy and give them pleasure, that's called love. Without any tinge, not even a pinch, of a desire of enjoyment. The closest you can get to that, may sound like a hard sell, is generally what we see with good mothers. Unfortunately, I have to use the word good mothers nowadays, because it's not always the case. But between good mothers and their children, mothers will sacrifice practically anything for their child. And they do. And I've had experience. I had a good mother. I know many others who are good mothers, and I see it in action. It's a dynamic. Babies are born. We don't remember that. But mothers stayed up all night because we didn't let them sleep. They just give and give and give, and they take so much pleasure in our satisfaction. That's something that resembles the perfect love. I say it resembles because, unfortunately, it was based on a bodily interaction, and it wasn't in the knowledge of spiritual identity. We've got 2 minutes left. And so that's real love. So once again, I'll just tell the ingredients. The desire to give happiness and pleasure to the Supreme Soul and to other souls connected to the Supreme, and everyone and everything is connected, and not just humans, but others, without any desire for any kind of remuneration, even a desire for reciprocation. It doesn't mean that it doesn't come, but that's not the motivation. The motivation is just to give. That's called love. And when you want something, that's called lust. So it's a real science. And spirituality is actually meant to teach us how to love. How to love God, and when you know how to love God, then you know how to love everyone else. Otherwise, it's just a word. Here's my carrot. So we need to learn how to love. As extraordinary as it sounds, since everyone is singing day and night about love, 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 but actually we don't really know what love is. It's just a word. And we tag a lot of things onto that word, love. But it's a science. It's a real science of loving. And that's what spiritual traditions, religious traditions, teach us to do. A tree, you take a tree, and when you pour water on the root of that tree, then you're nourishing all the branches, all the twigs, all the leaves, all the flowers, all the fruit of the tree. So similarly, when you learn how to love God, when we learn how to be real lovers of God, then automatically we learn how to be lovers of not only other human beings, not just our family members, not just people of the same color, not just people in the same country, but we learn how to love all other animals, vegetables, the planet, the whole ecosystem. And if we really know how to love, then there wouldn't be global warming, we wouldn't have all the catastrophes, we wouldn't have all the wars. And the reason that all of these things are actually occurring is that we're loving less and less, although we may be singing it more and more. So I'm going to end on that note, and unfortunately Deepak, Rishabh, Ki, and Aris I couldn't answer all your questions, although Aris says, am I a vegetarian? Yes, I think that's obvious by now. And Ravi wanted to say something?
No, next time we'll answer.
The next time we will continue on with these, and we won't tell you when the next time is, but we will certainly announce it on Facebook. It's been great talking to you, although I feel like I'm just talking to myself, but the good thing is there's another couple of people here in the room, and if I was able to actually see others, then it would be a little more interactive. Anyway, thank you all very much for spending your time, and have a great day, and I hope that our answers were able to shed a little light on your path.
Very good.
Oh my gosh, that was amazing.
Amazing. You've been hearing it for 40 years.
That's the problem. I haven't been, I think.
That was just so amazing. So glad to see
4,000 people.
4,000 people.
In total, yeah.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Honestly, that was after that big meal as well. How did you do that?
I was empowered by the big meal.
The Shakti of the meal. I should clash
Shakti of the meal.
That
was so amazing.
Yeah.
Shakti Shukta. It was definitely.
That was so good.
Okay.